Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Do one more howl. They don't laugh, though.
No.
The gray wolf is in danger. In the 1970s, wolves were one of the first species to be protected under the Endangered Species Act due to population decline. In the years that followed, Congress removed protections from gray wolves, first in the northern Rocky Mountains, then across the country. By February of 2022, federal protections were restored to wolves in much of the contiguous United States, except in the northern Rocky Mountain region, where more than 80% of the killing of wolves occurs. I've always been passionate about animals and their welfare. So on this episode of my podcast, we're talking about how we can help protect the gray wolf and learn more about these wonderful creatures. Joining me today are Samantha Atwood, co-founding member of the hashtag ReListWolves campaign, and Maggie Howell, executive director of the Wolf Conservation Center, right here near my home in South Salem, New York. Welcome to my podcast, Maggie and Samantha. And it's a pleasure to have you here to talk, because wolves are on a lot of people's minds right now. Do you know why?
Why? I hope it's because of our campaign.
Well, I wish it were just your campaign, but you should be very thankful that Kevin Costner and Yellowstone have brought wolves to the forefront of everybody's sort of consciousness. You know, you watch the conflict on that show between the conservationists who are trying to save the wolves and the wildlife in the national parks and all the contiguous properties. And then you see the ranchers who want to kill the wolves because they kill the calves and da-da-da. But I think we are all kind of thinking, all my friends are watching Yellowstone and thinking wolves. And did you put that together or not?
Sort of. Sort of. I'll have to say.
What do you think? Do you think they're doing a disservice or a service to the wolf population on that show?
I think any point at which the wolves are becoming part of the conversation is a win, right?
It opens. That's what I think. That's what I think. And I think that you have a chance now, an opening, a big opening to get to all those millions of people that are watching Yellowstone season 5. So it's kind of interesting.
It really is. No, we really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, Maggie and Samantha, tell me, what is the hashtag ReListWolves campaign all about?
Okay. The ReListWolves campaign is a campaign aimed at restoring Endangered Species Act protections to the gray wolf across the entire, 48 states in the United States. Our campaign, we founded in June 2021, shortly after there's this really horrible wolf hunt in Wisconsin, where 218 wolves were killed in under 60 hours. By any means necessary, running them down with ATVs, packs of dogs, night hunting, baiting, snaring, you name it.
What was the reason?
The reason is, well, Maggie, you want to take that one?
Yeah.
What did they say? Why did they go on such a massive hunt?
Because wolves had been protected due to legal battles. They've been going back and forth over wolf protection, really across the United States. And so when it was actually former President Trump, his exiting kind of speech almost out of the office was to delist wolves nationwide. So after protections were lost, really there were some people just raring to go for a long time to kill wolves. And a lot of it's just based on fear and hatred, which is really unfortunate. And but really what we saw happen, as soon as they lost protections is just how important protections are. And really, Samantha mentioned, it was like 60 hours. And these are wolf pups, it was...
But what do you do with a population that exists today that carry guns? Why does a regulation stop them from killing wolves? It doesn't really, does it?
One of the things we say is legal killing leads to more illegal killing. So it emboldens everybody when these protections were lost. Look, you can't save every single wolf. Will there be poachers? Yes. However, regulation has a massive impact on protecting these species. And that's the goal of the campaign, which is actually to restore these protections to wolves and to do it in a way that's a little bit interesting and out of the box, where we're talking to the public, we're putting pressure on public officials. We're going about this in a little bit of a different way because, interestingly enough, this issue until recently has really flown under the radar. And in my opinion, you love your dog, you love nature. There's only fewer than 6,000 wolves left in the lower 48 states. We're not talking That's all. And they're being hunted down. Montana and Idaho alone passed legislation to incentivize the killing of between 85 and 90% of their wolf populations. It's an
all because
out
of
war.
The cattle?
I think sitting where we are, it can be a little hard to understand. When you look at the data, wolves are responsible for less than 1% of unwanted deaths of cattle. That's unwanted. That includes disease, sickness, birds of prey, believe it or not. Wolves are responsible for 1%. Mm. And the data really doesn't actually support what's happening here. And frankly, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not kill wolves, protect cattle, keep the wolves, all the cattle are going to get eaten. There's really, really good mechanisms you have, whether it's fencing, flags, lights, livestock guardian dogs, all of these things that work and allow you to actually coexist with these animals who are incredibly important for our ecosystem.
There's a lot of really major forces working against wolves, whether it's the cattlemen kind of lobby or the NRA or hunting associations. And there's not that many groups, or I guess a lobby, really speaking for wolves. And, they need our voices. So that's why the campaign's been so great, to really elevate what's already been out there among many conservation groups, but to bring it to really people across all different functions. So lawyers, you have the artists, you have, just
novelists. Cormac McCarthy, his fantastic books mentioning the wonderful wolf population.
Yeah, and now Yellowstone, right?
Yes. Yellowstone.
So just to elevate this and give everyone an idea of what's really happening, and hopefully, really the roadmap they need to use their voice and create change.
So you co-founded this this group.
My mom co-founded this, and I kind of got sucked in. Oh. So it's kind of a funny story. So, my mom's a very passionate environmentalist. I am too. And, she saw what happened after these hunts and saw what was going on.
Is Leslie Atwood, who is a neighbor of mine here in Bedford, New York.
That's
And she is a passionate woman in many, many, many different fields.
Absolutely. And, she saw what was going on and was like, wow, we need to kind of take an out-of-the-box approach. Can we all speak in one voice? All these little NGOs, all these groups that are doing such great work on the ground, we're stronger together. We are going to, at the risk of stealing someone's phrase over there, we are able to speak in one voice, and it is much more impactful. So I kind of got sucked in because I was going to, you know, help get our campaign firm, Tusk Strategy, set up, get a social media expert who you would love, by the way, Brendan Kennedy. He comes from a fashion background, to actually look at things a little bit differently. So I was going to help the team set up. And then as I learned more and more about this issue and how important wolves are, I just couldn't, I couldn't step away. So outside of my day job, this is what we do.
What about you, Maggie? How did you get involved with this campaign?
Well, we're practically neighbors with Jim and Leslie and Samantha. So we've known them for quite a bit. In fact, we had a wolf celebrate his 15th birthday at their restaurant, gosh, some handful of years ago. But it was quite a turnout when people showed up to celebrate with a big meaty steak.
No, people still talk about it.
Yeah.
They still talk about that. So, and this is one of the wolves from the conservation.
Yes, his name was Atka. Center. He's since passed away. He passed away a few years ago. But boy, it was.
He was famous.
He was famous.
Yeah, he was famous. He was a beautiful wolf.
Yeah.
I got to talk to him a couple
times.
Yes, you
did. But really, I just appreciated new strength and new kind of energy coming into the fight for wolves. So I thought, you know, the more the merrier. And you know, the strength of the wolf is the pack. And to have the Relist campaign kind of join this effort, I just thought was great. And so I want to do anything I could do to help, and it's been really fun collaboration.
Well, there are many threatened and endangered species of animals. Why are wolves so important?
Do you know what a keystone is? So a keystone species plays the exact same role in the ecosystem, where they basically punch above their weight in terms of the effects they have on the entire environment. And wolves are exactly like that. If you look at the reintroduction to Yellowstone that happened in the 90s, what you saw coming out of that was wolves actually are creating this environment where, you know, they're eating elk, yes, but they're actually making the elk herds move along more quickly, which meant the elk stopped browsing vegetation, allowed the beavers to come back, allowed erosion to stop alongside the streams, and really, you know, allowed these fish to come back. So like all of these, as you call, like a trophic cascade effect happened within the ecosystem that was really due to these wolves coming back. Wolves are critical for healthy ecosystems.
I like that analogy to the keystone of a building. I have keystones in my arches of the stable.
Cool?
Yeah.
Science has nailed it on that one.
No, you don't want to lose the keystone because everything comes tumbling down.
Exactly.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So the ecosystem that exists in the wild in the United States is fragile, becoming more and more fragile with the expansion of the gas lines, with the weather, the horrible climate crisis that we're experiencing right now and probably forever henceforth, don't you think? And so disbelievers, people who don't see a climate crisis or don't see the what's happening to the wildlife in the United States, how powerful can this group be to make people pay attention? What can you do?
And
how can we help as individuals?
That's a great question. I would say as individuals, you know, the first step is awareness and education, right? And then going to take action, relistwolves.org, you can send letters to your representatives. You can share on social media from at relistwolves campaign. And frankly, opportunities with folks like yourself, Martha, who are you're a keystone in your own way, right? You punch above your weight in terms of all the people that you reach. Using your voice is an incredible opportunity to shed light on this issue and let folks know, like, there is a path here. The path here is to get wolves relisted. That decision lies with the Biden administration, and they are currently conducting what's called a status review. So it started in September of 2021. They said they were going to take 1 year because of all the hunting. They were going to make an assessment in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, it's now December 22.
It is.
They're late,
and they have to know that we're paying attention. So every call you make, every letter you send shows them that we're paying attention and that this is an issue that, you know, I think the public, you know, really should care about. You know, 6,000 wolves may not seem like such a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but every little bit helps. Everything we do.
I'm shocked that that's all there are.
And in the lower 48 states.
Yes.
Yes.
Alaska more.
There's
Canada more. Are they protected in Canada?
No, Canada's facing many of the similar issues.
Yeah, the Algonquin wolf has some protections just...
Algonquin?
Yes, just north of us, basically, the eastern or Algonquin wolf. But generally, it's pretty much open season on wolves. Mm.
I consider them gorgeous creatures. I love dogs that look like wolves.
Me too.
And I think about wolves, and I think about how badly they've been treated by so many people. Farmers have done terrible things to wolves. One of the things I can't stand is to read some of the bad things people have done to them. They're not humans. They don't know that they're being, you know, why they're being tortured.
No.
And they tortured them.
They do.
So what can we do? Just letters.
Letters,
outrage.
Talking about this outrage, and also like,
do you make a lot of personal appearances talking about wolves to groups?
You know, to some degree, I think anything we can do to get into the public conversation is what we want to do. And, you know, you mentioned they're animals. They don't have a voice. It's our obligation and responsibility to actually be the voice when we can.
Well, it's like the octopus. I mean, did you watch?
My octopus teacher?
Yes. Did you watch that? And yet every single restaurant that's had octopus on the menu still has octopus on the menu. I will not eat octopus. I mean, I never ate it anyway because I've always loved octopus.
Yeah.
But as a creature. Yeah. But it's just incredible. They're just, doesn't make any difference. And that was a powerful movie, powerful documentary.
And the difference between octopus and wolves is that the octopus isn't surrounded already in this cloak of untruths and myths and fables that have been, you know, around for centuries.
Yes.
So beyond like giving the wolf a voice and asking people to protect wolves and care about wolves, we have a lot of unraveling to do to change perceptions of the wolf, because already people have a really poor...
The big bad wolf and Little Red Riding Hood.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what this was.
They need rebrand.
That's right.
Even our language. You know, just if you open the New York Times on a given day, you're probably going to see some Wolf of Wall Street or Lone Wolf Terrorist, or really just we have to kind of unleash some of these negative connotations that we connect to the word wolf, and kind of start from scratch so people can understand what they really are. They're wild animals living their own wild lives with their
gorgeous family members, right?
You know, just trying to do and survive, you know, and thrive on the landscape.
Yeah.
So in comes another canine, I guess it's a canine, the coyote that lives all around us here in Westchester County. What do you think about them?
I love coyotes. the thing about coyotes that I find most remarkable is that just like wolves, they've been persecuted for centuries and they're thriving. And now they're not only thriving, but they're in they're in 49 of our 50 states. So every state except Hawaii.
Yeah.
So in terms of being outfoxed, the coyote is remarkable. However, still we're killing just hundreds of thousands of these animals.
I have a pack of coyotes on my property. They could just as well be wolves. I would have a very hard time shooting a coyote.
Yeah.
And yet the coyotes are wreaking havoc on a farm. Mm-hmm. I mean, here I am living in this little world here, this little 150-acre world of mine, wondering what the heck am I going to do with these beautiful creatures? They walk with me when I ride my horse, the coyotes.
It's interesting. Horses.
I talk to them, they listen, and yet there they go at lunchtime not long ago and ate 6 of my most beautiful peacocks.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
They did. They just ate them at daytime, at noon.
Yeah.
When everybody else was having their lunch, they had their lunch. But, and then I called the town and I said, is there some way to, and I'm fenced.
Yeah.
But coyotes have their way of getting in and over and under fences everywhere.
We'll have to set something up for you because there are lots of really neat tools to use that can be proactive, non-lethal to help deter that sort of conflict.
So are you doing that for people being beleaguered by wolves too out in the West?
We don't do it personally at the Wolf Conservation Center because we're here. We don't have wolves, but definitely there
are. Handbooks would be very good
because
I'm not about to go out and shoot the coyotes. No.
And actually you say they could be wolves, you know, in terms of.
They could be wolves.
Yeah, they actually are a little bit wolf.
I know they are.
Because the coyotes we have in this area are called Eastern coyotes.
Well, we had a pack of 7 babies last year and I've watched them grow up. And some of them are really dark, almost black.
Yeah.
And some are kind of a golden color. And there they are. And, I go out with flashlights at night and find them. And what do we do?
Well,
my domesticated animals cannot roam. My dogs, I'm not worried about my dogs. Isn't it funny? Because my dogs would make mincemeat of the coyotes, I think.
Probably.
But I don't want my dogs to have the taste of blood like that. I just don't want them to. So I don't want them to get in a fight. But what do you do? What do you do? What do you do?
There are things a lot of it's based on fear. A lot of animals, wolves, coyotes, have something called neophobia, fear of anything new. So it could be fladry, kind of flags or ribbons that are on fence line or noisemakers. Just anything that's going to shock them so they don't feel comfortable. So,
peacocks are pretty noisy. They're not afraid of peacocks.
They probably thought they were like toys. I mean,
big, something so these flashy. Are giant peacocks. These are not, they're as big as the coyotes, if not bigger.
It's quite a snack.
Yeah, it was really something.
Yeah.
But back to wolves. Tell us about the gray wolf because I think everybody says that's really what we're trying to protect the most now since there's only 6,000 of them. And there's many millions of, I bet there's millions of coyotes, right?
Yep.
Millions. So what about the gray wolf?
I think the one thing I would say on the last point, though, is that like the conflict reduction methods are very similar when you're dealing with predators. It really is about, securing as much as you can, but you can't secure everything, right? So it is lights. It is like a livestock guardian dogs, range riders, various things that work. And I think what we want to highlight is there is a middle ground here, right? There are solutions. And frankly, in my opinion, those are the things that we really should be funding at the state level to try to coexist with these beautiful creatures. You'll hear that people are, we're going to be overrun by wolves. I'm like, there's 6,000 of them. I think we're really far off from that. We're going in the wrong direction. But even where there's like all of these elk, all of this food, all of this environment, it's hard being a wolf. You have to chase down huge prey, very high mortality rates. And so they've actually really stabilized. I think, sadly, last season, there were 25 Yellowstone wolves who were killed. That's 20% of the population. Mm. There are only 125 in the park, which is about
where were they killed?
They were lured out of the park and shot.
How are they lured?
The new laws that were passed in the past couple of years, 2021, allowed baiting for the first time. So they had people baiting right beyond the kind of boundary, that invisible boundary, would lure them from the safety of the park and
calls, like anything they could do to get the wolves out. And these are wolves, by the way, most wolves are not accustomed to people, but people come to Yellowstone to see wolves. Yeah, what is it like? I think there's $82 million per year in tourism revenue of people coming to see wolves in this area. And so they're kind of used to people. They're not expecting this invisible boundary. You cross it, you're going to be shot and killed. How terribly unfair is that?
Yeah, it is.
And that's in Yellowstone, where there is no management. There's no lethal management to control their populations. And that population has stabilized over the years. And the same thing in Wisconsin, where they've been protected for a handful of years. And during that time, without having these state-sanctioned hunts, they saw that the population reached carrying capacity. That means it really was able to kind of control itself and had stabilized, which demonstrated that there's no, in terms of population control, the wolves, that they're set. That's not a problem. They can do that without our help.
How big is a gray wolf?
Well, they vary. There are different kinds of gray wolves. But a lot of people think from fairy tales or movies like Twilight and what have you, that there are these monstrous, huge animals. Like in the Great Lakes area of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, a female might be 70 to 90, maybe 100 pounds. A male might get up to 110 pounds. In the Northern Rockies.
So like Great Danes, not Great Danes, they're like giant German shepherds.
Yeah. They get a little bit bigger in the in the Northern Rocky states of like Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. A male might be 115 pounds. They can get bigger. There have been a few in Yellowstone that were over 130.
Now, Maggie pretty knows rare. All of this intimately because as director of the Wolf Conservation Center here in South Salem, how many wolves do you have there now?
We have 32.
Oh, wow. You have a lot more.
Yes.
And the last time I was there was a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And now you have 32. What kind of wolves?
There are different kinds. We have two wolves that we just call kind of our generic, which sounds terrible, the gray wolves. And they're who the wolves that help teach people. So they're our ambassadors or education wolves. And their names are Lewa and Nakai. And then we have 10 critically endangered red wolves, which is a totally different species of wolf, that are currently living only here in the north or southeast in the state of North Carolina. And then we have 20 Mexican gray wolves, which are gray wolves, but a different subspecies of gray wolf. And they're about, we have 20 of those, and they're about 200, a little fewer than 200 in the southwest United States.
Wow. They're all in pretty bad shape, numbers-wise.
Yeah.
What does your conservation center do for these wolves?
Sure. Yeah. So we obviously we house them, we take care of them, we nurture them, but we're really teaching people about them. So we do a lot of education programs. We have people on site. We do remote programs. We do scientific webinars. We really try to get that education at every level.
How big an area do you have for them to roam?
We have 34 acres right now.
Are they kept separate or are they together?
We have about 9 enclosures. They're separated by family groups. So we have some families that are just a pair of wolves. We have some families that are quite larger, up to 8 wolves, that are multi-generational, but wolves ultimately live or belong in the wild. So even, you know, if we have an enclosure that's say 2 acres or more, they're dynamic creatures. They belong in the wild. So keeping them in captivity is really difficult.
We have no wolves wild in this area, do we?
No, there has been the occasional wolf that's gotten into the Northeast, likely from Canada, and even into New York. But those animals are usually coming via like dead wolves. That's the only way we find out about them because we have really robust coyote hunting throughout the Northeast. People are like, oh, I killed a really large coyote. They do some genetic tests and confirm that it was a wolf. And that's happened a couple of times. So they're really close by. But there's no populations, just kind of known, no proven populations to be here right now.
What's the lifespan of a gray wolf?
It really depends. You know, Samantha touched on this earlier, how living in the wild is hard, even before you put kind of the human component in there. But, you know, most pups don't even survive to adulthood. About 60% of pups die within the first year, usually of starvation. During the late summer, I think, is the hardest time, early fall. But if they get past that first year and make it to 2 years old, they'll likely make it maybe to 4 to 6 years old if there's no, you know, hunting. So those, you know, the things that can really be an issue would be disease, starvation, usually just for the youngsters, and actually other wolves. So wolves are a top predator, but they also have lots of competitors out there. And wolves will compete with mountain lions. Wolves will compete with bears. They'll compete with coyotes to a degree, but they also compete with other wolves. So they're very much like people in that they have their home turf, kind of like their area, and they're going to defend their territory from their neighbors.
What about fox?
Fox don't really pose much of a competition risk for wolves.
They're pack animals, wolves.
Yep.
So how big is a pack?
That varies, but basically, you know, what a wolf pack is essentially just a family. Even, you know, the alpha male, alpha female kind of terms have been pretty much, aren't used so much in the wolf circles these days, because really just the alpha male would be the dad, the alpha female is the mom, and they are the bosses, because that's how it goes. That's how it should go, right?
Yeah.
So, and then they have their offspring once a year, every year, and that will make up the rest of the pack. Sometimes a wolf that's not related will join the pack, but their dynamics, you have just like with our families, you know, they kind of leave the nest at some point and start their own families. So so that's why the numbers are a bit, you know, it changes.
You had a lot of babies at the
We have. Center? We actually were hoping to have some more babies this spring. But last spring we had one litter born, Mexican gray wolves.
How many are in a litter?
This litter was 5.
That's healthy.
Yep. And one of them actually was released into the wild, which is very exciting. And but the largest litter we've had at the Wolf Center was a litter of 9. And we decided that we wanted to name each member after a really important players on the Yankees.
Oh.
And we thought, oh, how fun, because I make a baseball team. And so we're trying to do that. And then we decided last minute to
I hope you have an Aaron.
Well, there was a lot of debate, a robust ongoing debate about who should these Yankees be. And actually we decided on second thought, we'll name them after female conservationists, because of course, Yankees, female conservationists.
Natural.
But it worked out for the best because the boys from that litter were actually transferred to a different facility in Boston. And if they were named after the Yankees, it would have been terrible.
Really? Yeah, nobody would have liked them.
So female conservationists won out.
So wolves, what do wolves in the wild eat? What are they looking for?
Yeah, so wolves, their menu will vary depending on where they live. Like in Yellowstone, they're going to be hunting animals like elk, deer, deer, bison. Sometimes it's a little bit harder for them, but there is one pack called the Molly's pack for years. That was really, their expertise was hunting bison effectively. They'll also eat, smaller animals like beaver, hare, you know, really it depends. It's going to take the whole family group though, in order to really chase down and successfully hunt an animal like an elk or a bison. Right. Those other animals would be more of like a single snack.
What's the ideal habitat for the gray wolf? Is it, I mean, do they seem to be rather adaptable?
They are very adaptable. And the ideal habitat is a habitat that has prey, honestly. That's going to be the biggest thing.
Are they looking for opossums and skunks and things like that too?
They could. Yeah. No, like even like the Arctic gray wolf, let's say, while they're really large, you know, caribou migrations, and there's the muskox, but otherwise it's pretty barren. So they're going to be hunting things like lemmings and Arctic fox, really the smaller prey. And those are the ones where they won't rely on the rest of the family members necessarily. But because food is a bit more scarce, they have a larger territory size because they have to roam farther distances just to find food. They tend to have smaller litters as well.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So the question is, what's the difference between being endangered and being threatened? Is there a distinct difference?
Yeah, I would say, you know, endangered, when a species is designated as an endangered species, they get the maximum protections, right? Can't hunt them, like you have to kind of preserve their habitat. And endangered means, well, they're at risk of going extinct. Threatened is kind of like the next level, which is like, yo, you think they're going to become endangered. So by the time they're endangered, it's really dire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're now endangered.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yes. Endangered. Yeah, they are. I mean, if you look at what's happening with these hunts and all the barbaric methods that are being used, and frankly, like, you know, there are groups and states that are paying bounties. They are incentivizing hunters to go out and kill wolves. They're going to pay in Idaho. They'll pay between $500 and $2,500 per wolf. And there's no, I mean, it varies everywhere, but like there's not a much limitation in terms of what hunters can go out. They could go get 20 wolves.
Yeah.
And it's really...
It's really slipped into the dark ages. And we know better. I mean, we used to have likely more than 250,000 wolves living coast to coast in the lower 48. And really it was through, you know, these predator eradication programs that used poison and bounties and trapping and snares that brought them down to just a few isolated, you know, almost family groups, mostly in the Great Lakes area, and they were gone everywhere else. So then, you know, with the Endangered Species Act being passed in 1973, we stopped killing wolves and we started to protect wolves. And
how many wolves had we counted? I mean, if there's 6,000 now, what was the most we ever counted?
Well, they weren't counting, but they're estimating at least 250,000.
Really?
And that's, yeah.
When was that?
That was really before we colonized and started these massive programs to just get rid of most of the predators.
Yeah, this is like, you know, late 1800s, I would say. Yeah.
So many.
So it was a long time ago.
When the bison were running free.
The law was different.
Yeah, and there were millions of bison, and now they've been reduced to such a pitiful number, too.
No, it's true.
You know,
it's really true.
So the endangered species list, that was what year were they removed from it?
So they were removed from it. It's gone back and forth, kind of a legal battle, but they were initially removed like in 2011, and it's kind of gone back and forth in different places for a little while now. But while it has gone back and forth, it's been a little bit confusing. But we've seen what happens when there is wolf hunting. Mm-hmm. And then we've seen when wolves are afforded protections, really a lot of those populations stabilize, which really takes away, you know, some of the reasons there, the justifications for these hunts in the first place.
Is there legal hunting anywhere in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
Legal hunting right now is in Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana.
Oh.
And that's where, again, like Samantha said, they're using some of these, you know, bounties. You know, bounties aren't legal. I mean, essentially, we kind of got over bounties. You know, we celebrated the Endangered Species Act. Its 50-year anniversary is next year. I mean, it's one of the most successful environmental laws.
Are you optimistic that will be reinstated?
I don't know.
I think it's unfair. I think it's very unfairly, but wolves have become sort of an emblem of this political battle between environmentalists. And, you know, we don't want to be told what to do at the state level. And the problem is, it really is not, the wolves are caught in the middle. It's not about the science or the data behind it, because all of a sudden you're seeing a lot of emotion being pulled into this issue where if you actually look at the data, you look at how many cattle are being killed by wolves. You look at Montana, the state of Montana is being overrun by elk right now to the point where it's a big problem that everyone knows about. You have a natural solution here, and yet you're out there killing your natural solution at the same time.
This endangered species list, who else is on it?
Oh, gosh, lots of critters.
Yes.
Yeah, so it depends, you know. Again, different parts of the country almost has different kinds of protection. But in terms of predators, you have the grizzly bear that's currently still being protected. Those different kinds of wolves, lots of birds.
Oh, yeah, birds. I mean, the bald eagle, that the Endangered Species Act is really responsible for one of the greatest conservation success stories, the, like, emblem of the United States.
We had our first sighting here at the farm last week.
Oh.
We got a picture of a bald eagle circling the whole farm, looking around. It was so exciting because I have not in the 20 years I've been here seen an eagle. Have you seen one here?
I haven't, but I live over in Washington and they're like a pest out there. They're gorgeous.
They are.
But, you know, one of the things, they actually still have some protections under what's called the Migratory Bird Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you see wolves, they're delisted. They have no protection. So I don't know if there's like a link between those two, but it's certainly something worth considering going from zero to,
Do both 60. Of you go to Washington and make your case? Do you actually go in front of the Congress or the people, the committees in charge of this act?
A key part of the campaign is really talking to elected officials. And we do have some of the members of our team are lobbyists who are going and doing that and making it clear why this is important. And frankly, like, I think if you take a step back, you look at the data, healthy ecosystems are something we can all get behind.
So what has been the public response to your campaign for relist wolves?
Oh, it's been awesome.
Has it?
It's been great. It's so awesome. And I think the thing is, it's like most people just don't know. How do you break through and talk to people? We've done a couple of really cool things. We did this collaboration with Jim Batcher, who's this pothole mosaic artist. So he put in these potholes that say relist in DC. We put up billboards. We collaborated with Jason Momoa and Sender Films on a public service spot. All of these things are, you know, incremental grains of sand that are building up into a mountain of change. And so it's been really great, but I would say probably every day I talk to someone, whether it's at work or a friend, they're like, they didn't know about this issue.
Do the wolves like the cold weather?
They love the cold weather. Yes.
Yeah. And do they have dens? Do they go into dens at night?
They do. And, you know, we're terror. I would hate to be a wolf at the Wolf Center sometimes just because we have webcams everywhere.
Oh.
So we have webcams in their enclosures and also in their dens. So unbeknownst to the wolves, we have an unlimited number of, like, a global audience, basically, sneaking into their dens at night to watch.
How do we access that?
At our website, it's just nywolf.org. But, yeah, I encourage everyone to go check out the wolves.
The webcams are so cool.
Yeah, so really that's awesome. That's important. I mean, you can watch so many animals by webcam. And it is extraordinary that we can be nosy.
I know.
In the best possible way.
We are nosy.
Yeah, we are nosy. So wolves were some of the first animals shielded by the Endangered Species Act. And the decision, well, we've discussed this, have been politically charged ever since. And how do you really think we can change this? We need a president that cares.
You know what?
A voice that cares and is outspoken.
And who's ready to be brave about an issue that is surprisingly difficult. And I think we've been surprised at how difficult it has been to push this administration, which generally is very science-driven, until they can actually come up with a plan to meet in the middle and figure out how do we live with wolves. They need protections, and the administration needs to recognize that and restore them.
Well, I really think that you have to go out to Montana to the Yellowstone Ranch and talk to Kevin and his producers and make it even a bigger subject on such a program like that. Yes. And get some more programs about wolves, because as you say, they have been made menaces. They have been made evil.
Miscast.
They have been miscast. Well said. Miscast is the best word. They've been miscast in American history. And I think your voices have to be heard bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, we have some very exciting ideas, as much as you want to lean in with us here. And I mean, this is just an incredible opportunity to do that.
Thank you very much for educating us on such an important topic and these very, very beautiful creatures. To find out more, again, remember everyone, you can save the wolves by visiting Relist, R-E-L-I-S-T, wolves.org, and use the hashtag RelistWolves. And to learn more about wolves in general, visit NYWolf.org. Those are important addresses for you to know.
I have been instructed that before we're done here, that Maggie should teach Martha how to howl like a wolf.
Oh, can you howl really? And Maggie's name is Maggie
sort of volunteered
Howl.
Here. Yes,
which is so weird. But yeah. my name is Stu Art. I'm the artist of Stu.
Oh, that is good.
So
yes. Well,
okay,
I would blow out the mic,
Maggie. Don't get scared, everybody, because.
Pretty legit.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.